This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. Good to be with you. Matt, Brett. Coming up today, of course, Sven Sundgaard will stop on by. He is as I think, as happy as the day is long that we've got a little bit of the rain that came through yesterday. So he's feeling pretty good there. Ogema is going to join us from Native Roots Radio, and she is going to come on by. We are going to talk Julius Kapuscinski is going to join us. He is, of course, he is part of the fight to start up Line 3. He has been part of the Democratic Socialists of America of the Brainerd Lake region, and wants to talk a little bit about not only stopping Line 3, but also how this ties into what we should be freaking talking about, the Green New Deal, because, my God, we got all that rain yesterday in some areas. We're still in drought conditions in the state. We're going to be roasting for the next 2 weeks with hardly any rain. The West Coast is basically on fire. Canada is gone. I mean, at what point are we going to start taking this seriously? And Republicans are out there sitting there saying, "How dare you try to sell someone a clean car?"
God forbid the Democrats be right about something.
Oh, God forbid, you know. So we'll get to them. They'll join us here about 4:30 or so. Two things, of course. My search for the golden raspberry was delayed once again today, Brett, because I had to go up to a soccer game in Blaine. Hey, the Blaine tournament's great. Great to see soccer and stuff like that. But I want that golden raspberry. This is, of course, the Happy Raspberry Festival going on right now. I want that raspberry.
Soccer is a 90-minute game, so you could do it in. Just leave and search for a half hour. Then
well, okay,
come
so
back.
And I have to drop off a half hour early. So it really is a 2 hour window if you think about it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would have basically a good hour. I will get some search time tonight. Here's the clue too. All right, so far it hasn't been found. At least they haven't said it has been found. The Globe told a bit of history, but I think Hopkins will do just fine. Well, technically West Minneapolis, but things did eventually align. What kind of things happened nearby? Well, a novel concept for sure. Henry B. moved his crew nearby, and the millinery equals hot couture. Wow. All right, now we're getting fancy with the clues. No idea. Anyway, I'll have to kind of look these over a little bit because I will find that because I will eventually wear the golden raspberry around my neck like a trophy for a year.
Would you really say where you are looking if you did know where it is on the radio?
Not a chance in the plan.
You'd have to play your cards close to the vest.
Nope, not at all. Hey, by the way, quick note, speaking of Hopkins, remember on Monday when at 6 a.m. I was so proud because I decided to get into a swear fest with a trucker in my neighborhood because he was driving his truck illegally through the neighborhood, which has been going on for a while now in Hopkins. It's very unfortunate that these trucks keep driving through. And it's, you know, that's just, there's a nearby business that has a lot of trucks and these guys because of road construction, which is, I'm going to be first to say, yes, very frustrating, very frustrating. But you know what's even more frustrating? Living in a residential neighborhood and having a bunch of semi-trucks drive through it. That's pretty frustrating. And they've been doing it for a while. Anyway, guy runs a runs a stop sign in the neighborhood at 6 a.m. in a semi-truck, and I'm like, I lost it because it's been going on for a while. Well, I contacted the city, did what I'm supposed to do, and guess what seems to be their biggest point of concern now? The 100-plus or so truck incidents in my neighborhood or me yelling at a truck driver? Yeah. Well, thank God they're taking this. And by the way, I clearly apologized. And I said, I'm sorry, on this radio station, I wrote an email where twice in the email I apologized. And yeah, the only thing now it seems to be, oh, you were the problem here. Yeah, it's not the 100 plus cases of the trucks illegally and unsafely driving through the neighborhood. Me, Mr. Spouty McSpouty Pants. Gotcha. All right. So everyone hears me. Hopkins, are you listening to me? You're right. I was wrong. Funny story, the very next morning when another semi-truck came through the residential neighborhood, I did not yell at that person. I took a photo. I will share that with you a little bit later on, where they also ran another stop sign. You know, safety. Anywho, you're right. I was wrong. You've got to learn how to keep your control. You got to learn how to keep, you know, prevent from boiling over, getting rage-aholic, you know. You got to learn how to do that. And I lost it because, you know, yeah, I was more concerned about my neighborhood than I was concerned about, you know, what was the decent thing to do. And that was not right. And that is not right. And I was wrong. I am sorry. Did you hear that, Brett?
Spike strips would solve that problem.
Oh, no. No. Bad, Brett. Bad. Bad, Brett.
Now, if that happens, they're going to blame you.
Oh, yeah, they are. Oh, no. I guarantee you, if anything happens to a truck in there, there's going to be a ding dong, 6:45 a.m. What? Who's there? Mr. McNeilan. Yes, I'm an officer with the Hopkins Police Department. We need to have a discussion. I didn't do anything. They have to keep the game in front of them, and that is making sure the residents stay safe. And I get it. And I understand. Thank you. And the last thing you know is some, you know, you don't know. It's the other side, too. You don't know the mental state of the other individual that gets, you know, confronted, and you don't know what could possibly happen. So I get it. You know, I do get it. And I was wrong. I apologize. I did not chase after one person from city council basically said, don't be chasing down vehicles. He drove past me. I didn't chase anyone down. It's not like I'm running through the neighborhood like, I'm going to get that one.
Just picture you yelling through the neighborhood. Get out of my neighborhood.
No, I didn't do that. Anyway, all right. Thank you. No, thank you. I appreciate they have let me know they're going to start doing more patrols down there. So I hope things go well. It's illegal. It's unsafe. And I guess I was wrong for yelling, but I am not wrong for being concerned about my neighborhood, which is something that's rare nowadays. So 952-946-6205. So there are quite a few bigger stories today. But in my mind, there is not one that's bigger than the story that Andy Mannix broke last night, actually, with the Star Tribune. Because, wow. And I mean, wow. You saw the story about the destroyed records over the second precinct? Did you see that story, Brett?
Crazy.
The judgment here. Well, I think you and I both are. You and I do think a lot of like... Well, outside of confronting truckers in your neighborhood. But, I mean, when I saw this story, the first thing across my head, what were you guys trying to cover up? That's the first thing. And the fact that the way they did this and the way we find out about it points to, yeah, sounds like someone was trying to cover something up here. Let me read from the story here. As an unruly crowd besieged Minneapolis's 3rd Precinct headquarters last summer, officers on the other side of the city... On the other side of the city, which was not under threat, destroyed a cache of documents, including inactive case files, search warrants, and records for confidential informants. In a private police report, Minneapolis officer Logan Johansson disclosed at the end of other investigations in the second precinct to the Northeast decided to destroy the documents shortly after May 28th in direct response to the abandonment of the 3rd Police Precinct in Minneapolis by city leadership. If the 2nd Precinct fell, this sensitive information could wind up in the wrong hands, Johansson wrote. The data contained in these files could put the lives of CIs or various other cooperating defendants at risk. What happened at the 3rd Precinct wasn't some sort of coordinated criminal enterprise where people were trying to find out the informants and were using random people, most of which were not from Minneapolis, St. Paul, not from the state of Minnesota either, to torch the precinct while they, I guess, went inside and got the documents. I mean, it's not like some bad made-for-TV movie. The decision to destroy the files is now at the center of a legal battle playing out in Hennepin County courts. Public defender Elizabeth Karp says the officers acted without oversight and against police policy when they destroyed critical evidence in the charges against her client, 36-year-old Walter Power. Power is charged with a felony for allegedly selling drugs. Police collected evidence against him and based a search warrant on that were destroyed by the officers through cell phone data that has been lost, according to Karp's motion to ask the judge to throw out the case. So the only reason I think we're finding out about this is because here's this public defender saying, well, where's the evidence against my client? The city says, well, we don't have it anymore. Someone says, the Elizabeth Karp says, and like I said, this is pure hypothetical, but I think this is a pretty clear idea of what happened. Well, someone needs to explain where all the evidence against my client went, because you can't charge him with a crime if you don't have evidence. to which she must have gotten a copy of this memo from the Jonathan guy, Logan Johansson, which explained what had happened, which, by the way, should have her court case thrown out, because if you don't have the evidence anymore because you so frantically destroyed so much of it, well, here's a person who might be a criminal is going to be let go because of your reckless action. Karp, who declined to comment beyond court documents, also asked Judge Todd Feldman to issue an order prohibiting police from destroying or misplacing any more evidence related to their case. There is nothing to suggest the unrest in Minneapolis is experiencing will end anytime soon, Karp wrote in court documents. As such, this court must ensure the integrity of the judicial system remains intact and that all evidence used to build a criminal case is preserved. As for comment Wednesday, Minneapolis police spokesman John Elder said the department is investigating. We're conducting an internal investigation. Oh, sure. To understand what happened at the second precinct, not under attack, by the way, how the decisions were made, and whether there was a broader issues with documents, records, or files stored in their facilities during the riots. Well, the fact that you have active cases that involve evidence that you are holding in that precinct, and the officers in that precinct decided to destroy said evidence and still think the city thinks they can bring charges against people? Come on. That's just ludicrous at this point. And you want to know the truth is, if the police themselves destroyed the evidence, you should not give them the second bite at the apple by saying either a photocopy or testimony about what the evidence actually was should be allowed in court, because they're the ones who destroyed it. If they didn't think it was worthwhile keeping, which they clearly didn't, well then. But I think, once again, I don't want to bury the concern here that I and I imagine a lot of other people do have at this point, which is, what else were you destroying? Were any union records, perchance, possibly? Were there emails? Were there databases? I would like to know exactly what was destroyed in the second precinct and who exactly did it. Anyway, back to Elder. We're conducting an internal investigation to understand what happened in the second precinct, how the decisions were made, and whether there were made broader issues with documents, records, and files stored in other facilities during the riots. Any disciplinary decisions would be made through the normal process after an investigation. So, because the entire disciplinary system in Minneapolis police is completely and totally screwed, nothing will happen. These people will destroy a bunch of evidence, a bunch of criminals will eventually walk free, and they probably destroyed other things that we probably should not have been keeping secret, and nothing's going to happen. They'll get a stern finger wagging, waggy, 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 waggy. That's just, how in the hell are you this freaking incompetent at your jobs? How are you this? I mean, my God, when we had Winston Smith get shot and they said, well, no one had their cameras on, my jaw literally went on the table. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is Minneapolis. How in the world is anyone going into any police action without every freaking camera they possibly have on and running, fully charged? And yet, not once again, another fine example of just, bruh, what in the hell? Tara Niebling, the spokeswoman for Jacob Fry's office, said she strongly supports MPD's decision to conduct a thorough investigation in this matter. It's committed on blah, 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 blah. Feldman has set a hearing for the motions on July 27th. It'll be interesting to see what happens there, because I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be, there's going to be a lot of fallout of that. The rioters never came for the second precinct that week. In the days following Floyd's killing, most violence was concentrated in the third precinct across the Mississippi River and more than 5 miles south of the second precinct. Did you know of anything that was over by the second precinct? The Lake Street and Lake Street area and the Lake Street area and Fifth Precinct. So Lake Street and Fifth Precinct, but not the second precinct. I didn't know of anything over there. Some who breached the third precinct did steal items from the building. Police arrested Brandon Michael Wolf on June 3rd, wearing a police vest and stuff like that. A month earlier, Minneapolis police executed a no-knock search warrant to Powers rent a duplex on Northeast California Street, where they found almost 3,000 oxycodone doses with the MDMA and marijuana. Along with criminal complaint, Powers has been charged with first-degree drug sales on May 4th. But he's not going to be sentenced because you got rid of the evidence. In order to get the judge to sign off on the search, the officers had cited evidence they already gathered through separate warrants to search other residences' cell phones to collect GPS data. For the GPS data, the officers issued a warrant to Sprint, which sent updates on Powers' longitude and latitude. In March, the confidential document that has since been published as an exhibit in the Powers case, Johansson informed the courts the warrants were among the documents the officers destroyed. 2 months later, when Hennepin County prosecutors asked for the GPS data, Johansson reported those records also were gone. The unit he worked for at the time has since been disbanded in an argument over to augment ever-dwindling numbers in the patrol forces. An unidentified. Well, then why? Why is that information gone? Just because an agency or a department within the police department gets disbanded, shouldn't all the warrants and evidence that you had from that agency or that task force still exist? I mean, where is that information? Wow. An unidentified investigator who authorized them to destroy the files and had access to the GPS data was long gone with the department and has since left the state, wrote Johansson. Who did this? Bob Kroll? Was it Bob Kroll that did this? Did Bob Kroll order this? I no longer have access to the data he included. If Bob Kroll is behind this, my God, is this stink as the day is long, huh? He included a list of longitude and latitude points in the report, but acknowledged that it was only could find in his email. He did not necessarily represent a complete amount of data. You're going to get all these cases thrown out, you fools. In court, this is just crap police work. What kind of cops are you, man? Prosecutors are preparing to argue against Karp's motions in writing and in front of the judge later in the month, said Lacey Stevens, speaking for the Hennepin County. Just let the charges go. If the judge actually goes along with this farce at this point, that you can basically try someone without any of the evidence because the police themselves destroy it, and some mysterious figure within the police department who has now left the police department and is now out of state, who they don't want to mention who it is, ordered them to do it. My God, this is just. Like I said, how are you this bad at this? I'll take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Continuing with Andy Mannix's exceptional article here on, once again, for some reason, once again, the second precinct backed in the uprising after George Floyd was not under threat, but the police there decided to destroy a whole bunch of evidence for some reason, which we're really only finding out about because of this one case where the public defender wants the evidence, and now it's coming to light that the police over a year ago, mysteriously just destroyed a whole bunch of evidence and other things. Whether the judge agrees with Karp, that's the public defender, or the prosecution likely will depend on the lost evidence could help prove Powers' innocence and whether the police acted in bad faith, said Christopher Slobogin, S-L-O-B-O-G-I-N, director of Vanderbilt Law School's criminal justice program. Slobogin said the evidence will be relevant to Powers' innocence because if it goes to whether police violated its constitutional rights to be free from illegal search, as far as good or bad faith, it depends on whether the judge believes Johansson. Karp argues the police acted in bad faith because they destroyed the files with no order to do so from superiors. Because once again, and where is the line here? I want to make sure he basically says, well, it was a person who is no longer with the department. And the unidentified investigator who unauthorized them to destroy the files and had access to the GPS data is no longer with the department and has since left the state, wrote Johansson. I no longer have access to the data. Well, then who was it? Because it sounds like what you're doing is you're not going to admit who told you to do that. And there doesn't seem to be any written order to do so from superiors. But Slobogin says if he were the judge, he wanted to know why the police couldn't remove the files from the precinct instead of destroying them. Duh! Dear Lord, Yeah. Why couldn't you just take all the evidence, put it in a police truck, drive it to a different location, maybe St. Paul or someplace else? Why did you have to, in the middle of, and let me add some drama here. Why, in the middle of the night, did you frantically have to destroy all this evidence in the second precinct? Why? What the hell was in there that you didn't want anyone to see? And once again, your argument is, well, we didn't want this information getting on the streets. It's not some bad Netflix movie, dude. There wasn't like a covert team ready to move in and find out the names of all the people who had ratted everyone out. And the second precinct wasn't really, I don't think there was any problems anywhere near the second precinct, for God's sakes. This stinks. And the question I have is this officer who gave them the go-ahead, was it Bob Kroll? Because he seems to fit. He's no longer with the department. And I don't know. Is he out of state? I thought he was out of state. I thought he moved to Florida. I thought he had gone down there. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. I want to go to Bring Me the News version. They also covered this a little bit. The report says investigators disposed of inactive case files, search warrants, and records for confidential informants. Well, no, okay, you can't say inactive case files. If you've got a public defender who's taking their client to trial and they don't have the evidence anymore because you destroyed it, how in the world can you label that as inactive? That would be active. You destroyed active case files of active trials and court cases that are there. And right now, if I am a lawyer for anyone that was just convicted in the last year, I am demanding to see the evidence that they supposedly had that locked my client up. Because if you said you pled to a deal because the police said they had all this evidence against you, and so your public defender went out there and said, you know what, I don't think you want to go to trial with this. This looks a little sketchy. Let's take a plea deal. If I'm the public defender, the next thing I'm filing is, well, I want to see the actual physical evidence against my client. And if they can't get that, then I think you can negate that plea agreement very quickly and say, I'm going to go to trial because they were not acting in good faith when they told us they had evidence that they themselves knew no longer existed. Just think about it on the criminal side. There's a decent chance there's a whole bunch of people that are criminals that are about to get let go because of police incompetence. Insane levels of police incompetence. And these guys seem to be far more concerned about circling the wagons and preventing anyone from seeing what actually happened inside that second precinct and finding out who was behind it than they are about the fact that they probably, because of their hastily acted rash decision, is going to end up costing the city of Minneapolis. How are you this bad at this job? Seriously, how? I get it, but it was because my gut feeling is because the union head was such a troll for Donald Trump that he basically turned the entire department only into some sort of rah-rah system for the president and to basically suck for the Republicans. And the concern about whether or not they're actually doing good policing was a far less bigger concern for them. And this is the end result. It was more about themselves than it was about protect and serve. And that's how you get to this point. That would be my guess. That's just a pure speculation. Brett, you think anywhere close at all?
I would be shocked if it wasn't him.
Yeah. I would I gotta tell the truth. I would be too. I would be too. What an 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Coming up after the break, we're going to get into line three, talking about Green New Deal and also finding out, just how to try to stop this. Julius Kapushinski is going to join us from the Democratic Society of America, Brainerd Lakes Region. And Ogama Gnu Ikwe is going to join us as well, of course, from Native Roots Radio. That's coming up after the break. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. You know, I've, of course, if you listen to Native Roots Radio, which is on in the 6 o'clock hour here, they have been leading the fight against Line 3 here, at least on the radio airwaves in Minneapolis, St. Paul, across the state and across the entire country, really, as they're giving a Native news that no one's really able to get anywhere else. I have tried to get more and more involved, and as a matter of fact, I'm getting more and more outraged the more and more I read about Line 3, and on all levels, not only the environmental disgrace that that's going to be, not only the absolute violation of the Native American treaties once again. How about the lies about the jobs and all the safety? Oh my gosh, it never ends. Joining us to talk more about this, because I do want to bring this to the forefront, because we have to stop Line 3. It's clear at this point we need to get off of fossil fuels. If in case you're not noticing that burning smell you have in the morning and the evening, that's Canada. And right now it's on fire, as well as a good chunk of the Western United States. And it's not getting any better. And we're having animals roast in the ocean because it's so hot. And at the same time, as we clearly have enough screaming symbols that the world is changing and we need to change and get into cleaner energy and try to save this planet, we have a political party in the Republicans who are out there trying their hardest to not even allow you to get a clean car. That even the option of going onto a dealer lot and buying an electric car should be available to you, because they're so betrothed to coal, fuel, and gasoline, and it's disgusting. Of course, from Native Roots Radio, one of my favorites, Ogama Gani Ikwe. Am I close?
You're pretty close, Matt. Hi, Anine Bujou, everybody. I'm Ogama Gani Ikwe. I am from central Minnesota, and I'm a member of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota. My name means strong golden eagle woman, for any of you who would be interested to know what that translates to. And I'm happy to be here with you, Matt. Thank you for the shout out and for giving it your very best with my name.
Well, I want to just let you know, I had it right, and Brett told me wrong. I'm going to blame you in a heartbeat. This is how radio goes. I don't know if you know this. I really quickly, before we get to Julius here, I just want to let you know, I think you do such an amazing job with the news with Robert and Wendy on Native Roots Radio. It is such a pleasure to have you. And as he says, it's news you don't get anywhere else. It truly is a great show, and you are a major part of that. I am absolutely privileged to have you on. Thank you.
Yes, Miigwech. Thank you to you, Matt. I'm happy to be here too. I tune into your show before our show a lot of days, and I really, really enjoy your take and your progressive views on things that are happening. And I think that you're working and being a great ally when it comes to these kinds of issues, especially getting involved with Line 3. It makes total sense that the more you read about this, the more angry you are, because that's most people.
It doesn't make any sense at this point. It really doesn't. Let's bring on our other guest, Julius Kapushinski is joining us. He's from the Democratic Socialists of America, the Brainerd chapter, the Brainerd Lakes chapter. He has also been working against Line 3. He's also been a big advocate for the Green New Deal, which is really about time we start having this discussion. Julius, thank you as well for joining us this afternoon.
It's my pleasure. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me on. I very much appreciate it.
Let's talk about this. And obviously, Julius, we'll start with you. Let's talk about how you've gotten involved here. Now, obviously, you've worked with the DFL campaigns before. You've kind of moved more to the Democratic Socialist side of the party and of the political movement that's going on there, which is the Bernie Sanders kind of getting more into the Green New Deal, more into that government has a bigger responsibility to help its people. And it's easy to understand on a lot of issues, for sure. Talk about how you've gotten involved with Line 3 and how this has become such a major issue for you.
Well, the way I got involved in Line 3 was very simple. It's a local issue up here in Brainerd. I mean, part of that pipeline is going right through our backyard. Mm-hmm. So when we were first setting up our DSA chapter, that was one of the big things we were looking at, was this massive local issue that had the potential of helping us make greater connections with other organizations, as well as to get our name out there. Plus, the fact that it's for a good cause certainly doesn't hurt. So when we were first setting up our chapter, it seemed like a no-brainer to get involved in this issue, because it's an important issue, it's a local issue, and anything we can do to help raise awareness participate in collective action and make more people aware of what's going on is something that we're more than willing to do.
Ogama, there have been two stories that have come up that really have, okay, I'm done with this at this point. This has got to be stopped. We've talked, and you were the one that broke both of these stories for me, so I want to give you a chance to chime in and get a little background on both of them. First is the Willow River issue, where they're supposedly drilling this pipeline underneath Willow River. It sounds like they hit an aquifer. They immediately start spewing that muck that has the xanthan gum and the other toxic materials into the river. This is, once again, pre-tar sands oil. This is them just digging the hole, and they can't do it right, which is a huge red flag that they shouldn't be doing a project like this. And I presume they supposedly had research and surveys that told them where to dig, and they still screwed it up. And then the water issue, where they're trying to pump out as much water as possible, which is definitively hurting the Native American areas, the wild rice areas. There's a strong concern there, especially as the update today is that region is in severe drought. There is some serious concern on both of those. Why don't you talk about both of those issues if you can?
Yeah, absolutely. I can do that. So, yes, on July 6th, Enbridge was drilling. So what Enbridge Energy does to install the Line 3 pipeline is something called horizontal directional drilling. And what it is that they pre-drill a hole and then install the pipe into that hole. So they're drilling with this massive machine, and they have to lubricate this drill to drill a hole underneath the river, underneath the earth, underneath the river. And what happens is if they don't measure that right, you have something called, it's essentially the same as a frack out. What they're doing is fracking. Everybody talks about how oil and gas fracking is so terrible. That is essentially what they're doing, is fracking. That is why they need so much of the water in northern Minnesota to be able to do what they're doing. So they're taking this water, they're mixing it in with these chemicals, this bentonite clay and xanthan gum and all these things that are terrible for the aquatic life there. Bentonite clay is supposedly listed as non-toxic, but according to the state of California, it can cause cancer and reproductive harm. But also, it smothers mussels and other animals that live in the water because the clay is so very fine that there's no way for them to filter it out.
And then we should mention really quick, because you brought this point up, I think it was yesterday even, or 2 days ago, that it's such a fine particle. It's almost impossible to not call it toxic, because if you breathe it in, it's going to become toxic in your lungs. You're bringing in a foreign material. And as you said, when it's in the water, it coats and just wipes out animals and any plants. I mean, there clearly is a toxic side effect. It does make me question how in the heck someone could label something like that as non-toxic, because there definitely seems to be a toxic element, and there are other many countries that do consider it toxic as well as also xanthan gum, which is a flavor additive, which I can't quite figure out why you'd think putting an additive into the water is somehow a safe idea. I mean, it doesn't belong there, so that's wrong too. We should mention that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some of these things, I think people, like you were saying, there's been a lot of trickery. There's been a lot of lies surrounding this pipeline. And one of the lies that people have been told is that these things are safe. Well, yeah, technically, if you eat a small amount of xanthan gum or even bentonite clay, you'll be fine. But when they're using it in such large amounts and putting it into a waterway, it is no longer safe.
Can I ask one question about that fracking water? Because one of the things that was in the Dakotas when they'd frack for oil is that the water byproduct that came out of it was basically unusable for something like 50 years or something like that. Is the same kind of holdover rate for this fracking fluid there, that basically the water that's used to try to do this digging is basically useless for an extended period of time afterwards?
I'm not sure. That is information that I have not been able to locate publicly.
Okay.
What Enbridge is doing with this wastewater that they're going to have created and what safety level it is, I have no idea. What I'm concerned about personally is, like, in the Navajo Nation in southwestern United States, they're holding nuclear waste near their reservation, and have been fighting to have that waste removed and taken to different places for, 40, 50 years now. And I'm concerned about that in Minnesota. Are we going to be a holding place for this toxic water waste that they're going to have? Are they just going to be releasing it and expecting it to be filtered out by the groundwater because these elements are supposedly non-toxic? I do not know, and I don't. I haven't been able to locate the information into what Enbridge is actually doing with that water. The other portion of the water that Enbridge is drawing from the lakes and rivers here is they're dewatering, which means they're pumping the water with the intention of moving it to a different place. So they're not only pumping water above the ground, but they're also pumping water from aquifers. So they're pulling water out of the ground, out of aquifers for their drilling, and then they're moving the water that is above ground. And it's supposed to be all kosher that they move this water to a different wetland area because water is all connected. The problem with that is that aquifers are not replaced at a quick rate. Replacing the water in an aquifer takes an incredibly long time because the water has to filter through the earth below it. So not only are they drilling and moving water above and below ground, but while they were drilling underneath the Willow River, they had a frack out, and they released anywhere, estimates the last I heard were anywhere between 50 and 100 gallons of this fluid after they hit an aquifer while they were drilling. So they hit an aquifer while they were drilling under the river, which caused their drill and the hole they were drilling to basically blow a hole in the bottom of the river and start filling the bottom of the riverbed with all these chemicals.
Ugh. Well,
and they came out with buoys and nets, and apparently that's supposed to be enough. And there was water protectors who were there on the Willow River who were trying to call attention to this and calling the DNR and calling the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And the DNR sent police to that area to arrest the water protectors instead of sending people to investigate it. I believe it's being investigated now.
Yeah.
And work at that site has been halted, but work statewide is able to continue.
Well, and it should be mentioned, first of all, the brave water protectors that were out there, because by God, thank God they were there and saw it and took some photos, because that did get a stoppage here, because Enbridge doesn't, I don't think they were going to be telling anyone about what happened if not for some eyewitnesses. And as Ogema just said, of course, they sent the cops in there to basically crack some skulls and get people out of there, because God forbid anyone see what Enbridge is actually doing. The water thing, I want to go back to the when they're pumping the water out. One thing that's not, and this is something that obviously alarms me, alarms the Native American community, alarms any progressive in the state. Where are they taking our water? If they're pumping this out, I mean, is there any guarantees they aren't selling it to someplace else or using it for fracking in the Dakotas? I mean, do we have any idea where the water they're taking out of our aquifers in Minnesota, it's not being shipped off to the highest bidder someplace else?
You know, I don't know if there's any way to have that kind of guarantee. I mean, that would be bordering on paranoia, but given the level of drought in the western part of the country right now, I don't see it as being something that could be out of the realm of possibility. However, I mean, what we have to do right now, and part of the reason why this has been so frustrating, especially for Native people here, is that we've been saying no to this pipeline, to this project, now for more than 10 years. Enbridge has had this project in the work for 10 years, and we have taken every route politically, every route we can in a way, you know, through the court system, politically, all of those places, trying to get a stop to this. And we have been widely ignored and told, you know, not to worry about it. And now that it is affecting us and that it's doing things like choking out our wild rice and, you know, these spills and things like that are happening, you know, now people are wondering these questions are coming up. But I mean, going back to your thought about if they're selling the water, you know, I don't know. What we're stuck with is the system that tells us that we have to trust the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the DNR and the governor and the people who issued these permits to let this project come through, that environmental impact statement that was issued by a Trump administration era official that Biden has backed was enough to mean that this won't be a problem.
I should mention, and you did say paranoia, there's a lot of states that have already inquired about tapping into Lake Superior. They look at Minnesota as an eventual, you know, end-around reserve, considering they destroyed the Colorado River. And I wouldn't be surprised if someone's trying to make a dime off of that. I'll also say this, and this is for myself. Once again, it's just an insult to that the Native American people have treaties that are quickly and totally thrown aside yet once again just because corporate profits are on the line, and foreign corporate profits over the rights of the native peoples that were here before any Europeans ever got to this country. That is once as well a disgrace. But let's go back to Julius from the Democratic Socialist group up at the Brainerd Lakes there. Julius Kapuscinski is joining us as well. Julius, you get involved in this and you hear this. Let's break this into the Green New Deal, because clearly this is one project, and we can obviously focus on all the outrage on Line 3. We got PolyMet. We got these other issues they're trying to do. But the reality is we need a better world that's not looking to toxify things, pollute things, make more CO2, make a less safe world. We need a better world. And the reality is a very progressive environmental deal really is not an option or a desire. It's a must at this point. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yes, definitely. The fact of the matter is we're already dealing with the realities of climate change right now, whether you're talking about the heat dome in the Pacific Northwest or the various issues that ERCOT is dealing with down in Texas, or the Sunrise condo collapse leading into conversations about coastal erosion. The fact of the matter is we need to start thinking about how our infrastructure needs to change and adapt to deal with the current and future realities of climate change. And the Green New Deal is the best route for that. One of the main arguments that I hear all the time is it's too expensive. Well, expensive compared to what? The entire state of Florida going down into the Gulf of Mexico? Yeah. Is that what you want?
A Canadian town being burnt to the ground? I mean, how much did that? I mean, that's going to cost. I mean, obviously, the concern and the human toll is the most important thing. But let's take a look at the cost of that. I mean, that's not a value? For goodness sakes, there is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The fact of the matter is our infrastructure is already crumbling. We have an infrastructure rating nationwide of D+. That is deplorable.
Yes.
That does not work in normal circumstances, let alone a circumstance where our climate is changing rapidly and we need to make changes now to deal with it.
Julius, obviously, we're running out of time here. I want to give people an opportunity because obviously, and first thing I can say with Ogama for sure is if you're not listening to Native Roots Radio at the 6 o'clock hour, for goodness sakes, listen, because there's a lot of great information about Line 3 and protecting Native rights in northern Minnesota, but not, and because I'll say what Robert says, Native issues are human issues and human issues are Native issues. And he's exactly right. The water, the air, the land. We all appreciate that, and we need to preserve that. If you're not listening, listen. Ogama is sensational there. But Julius, I want to get people in touch because obviously your group is the Democratic Socialist of the of America. You've got the national chapter. You're the head of the Brainerd Lakes region there. Obviously, you can talk all day long about Green New Deal, stopping Line 3. If people are interested in finding out what they can do, more information, how can they get more in touch with you as well?
Well, if they're interested in learning more about what the DSA as a whole is up to, what they're about, what they're doing, the website for the National DSA is dsausa.org. The Twin Cities area does also have a longstanding chapter. It is one of the first ever chapters of Democratic Socialists of America. It was founded all the way back in the 80s. They're also online. You can look up their website fairly easily. And there are chapters all over Minnesota and beyond. There's a chapter down in Cannon Valley. There's a chapter over in St. Cloud, up in Duluth, obviously up here in Brainerd. And I would encourage those listening to do some research and get involved. Reach out to local activists and DSA members if you can find a chapter in your area. And if you can't, you can easily go about the route of starting one. I personally love to see more DSA chapters up here in Minnesota. I think that'd be amazing.
I think it would be too. And I think that we need to, because I think there's this mentality that this is just a Twin Cities or a metro area. It's not. It's everywhere, especially where it matters. And I agree with you there. DSAUSA.org. Obviously, I imagine they have links to all the different chapters there. You're up in Brainerd Lakes. Do you have a specific website for your Brainerd Lake region, or how should they get you in touch with you through the national site?
We do not have our website up and running yet, but you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. Feel free to reach out to us. I do my best to respond to inquiries pretty quickly. So feel free to reach out if you want to learn more.
I will link to the Facebook and the Twitter page a little bit later on. Julius Kapuscinski, once again, for the Democratic Socialists of America, the Brainerd Lakes chapter. Ogema Gnu Ikwe is, of course, the sensational news reporter for Native Roots Radio. Are you on tonight there, Ogema?
You know, actually, today we have a special guest host. David Knoyer is going to have on three guests, and they're going to be talking about the importance of Native art and how the Native art movement is going. So I will be on the show, but I won't be doing my news piece today. So I'm going to give you a quick note here.
Okay.
Gnu Collective just posted a few moments ago that police from three counties have surrounded their camp. The last time the police did this, Enbridge did the final pullback of Line 3 under the second Mississippi River crossing, meaning right now the drill is heading to the Mississippi headwaters. So they are going to be drilling under the Mississippi headwaters despite the frack out they just had at the Willow River on July 6th, and they're not being stopped. So if you're interested in stopping Line 3 and you want to get more involved, go to stopline3.org. That is probably your best one-stop shop place. And follow those places that we mentioned. And, of course, you know, tune in to us on Native Roots Radio.
I will. Ogema, thank you very much. Julius, thank you very much. We'll spotlight this interview. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. All right, so Ogema just buried something there at the end there. I just want to make sure I mention this. The Enbridge clowns trying to drill the hole, not put oil, not put a pipeline necessarily, just to drill the hole under the Willow River, screwed that up and sent their fracking fluid into the river when they hit an aquifer. Now, once again, you'd think these guys had done some surveys about where they were supposed to be, but I guess they can... But Ogema says they are headed there right now to the headwaters of the Mississippi River to try it again. You know, I am not with the state government, but I would say to myself, holy God, are you freaking crazy? No, 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 no. You should not allow, they just screwed up on the will. You're gonna allow these guys to go try to drill by the Mississippi River headwaters? I think you should pull back and say, guys, at the very least, we need to do some due diligence here, and you guys need to show us that you know what the heck you're doing. Instead, they're sending in the cops to make sure that no one sees the mistakes they make. Ugh, hour two, Sven Sundgaard up next as well. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Yeah, I'm trying to roll around in my head. If you missed last hour, Ogema Gnu Ikwe from Native Roots Radio joined us, and she gave us the update at the very end. It sounds like the Enbridge folks, just after we found out, only by the luck of having some water protectors at the scene as basically the contamination happened, that the Enbridge folks, when they were trying to dig under the Willow River, screwed up, hit an aquifer, and spent their fracking fluid into the river, which they have to clean up, which basically, if not for the coverage from those water protectors, we would not have known about. But don't worry. Yeah, the good news, the police are there to crack any skulls and prevent anyone from seeing anything that's going on over there because, yeah. Anyway, apparently Enbridge is heading over to the Mississippi River headwaters to start drilling over there. Who here feels confident they'll do it right this time? Not me. Brett, you feeling confident about this?
Jaw-dropping. Oh, let's go drill at the headwaters of the Mississippi. What could go wrong
what
there?
What could possibly go wrong?
We only screwed it up once. Give us a second chance. We promise. We pinky swear. We'll do it right.
Someone tells me xanthan gum is a binder. So do they like pour like a whole thing of Metamucil into the... Jeez.
Whatever that stuff is, I don't want to drink that.
Xanthan gum. If I gave someone who's a pro-pipeline person a big glass of xanthan gum water... And they tell them, okay, prove, you know, money where your mouth is. Tell us this is not toxic. Chug away. You think they would? I think that some of them would. And then, of course, we'd have to pump their stomach probably.
It's like the Mr. Burns scene from way back in The Simpsons where he has to eat the contaminated fish. He goes, ooh, that was delicious.
If I can eat Arby's, I can eat anything. Yeah, there you go. A man who was missing after a vehicle crashed into the Mississippi River in Minneapolis on Thursday has been found. Good news. Minneapolis police, fire, and EMS responded to a report of a crash near Main Street Northeast between 1st Avenue Northeast and 3rd Avenue. Did he miss the Hennepin Avenue Bridge? It sounds like he missed the Hennepin Avenue Bridge from where the description is. It sounds like he was on the Nicollet Island side. He was on the St. Anthony side of the river. Did he miss the? How did you miss the bridge? There's no turn there, dude. That would be a sidewalk and trees and rocks and then the water. That's how he would do that. Wow. When they arrived, they found a woman who was wet with mud on her. She had told police she'd fallen asleep, and then when she woke up, the truck was partially submerged in the Mississippi River and the driver was gone. The vehicle was in the water about 50 feet down. The vehicle was in the water about 50 feet down an embankment near Nicollet Island. So, yeah, he missed the road. It's got to be. It's going to be right by Nicollet Island. That's amazing. Crews searched the area for the missing man without success. It wasn't until the vehicle, It wasn't until the vehicle was being towed away from the water, the police spotted the driver hiding in the underbrush.
What? This is the worst hiding.
About 100 feet away, said Elder. Everyone involved in the crash has now been accounted for. No one has been injured. You're hiding. Now, I'm no expert legally, but I'm going to guess that you were concerned that they might, I don't know, breathalyze you or something like that. And your concern about whether or not you would pass said test might have driven you to try to hide in the underbrush of the river. That is a fall. You know what I'm talking about? So you go on Nicollet Island, right? Nicollet Island Inn, mm-hmm. who have sponsored AM950 in the past year. There's that bridge that's from Cleveland, that old Iron Rot Bridge. I think he went in between the Iron Rot Bridge and the Hennepin Avenue Bridge. I think he went in through there.
It's a big miss.
There's no boat launch there, is there? I don't know if a boat launched down there. Well, there is one now. Well, you got to have a boat, and you probably want to go in backwards as opposed to forwards. But needless to say, you'll figure this out eventually. He was hiding. Is this where Patrick is? Patrick's usually here today. Is this where Pat was? He hiding?
No, he is conspicuously gone on his normal Thursday shift. He was.
Is he lurking in the waters of the Mississippi, underneath the underbrush, floating around down there? Patrick, come home. You're okay. We won't hurt you anymore. 952-9.
Studio might smell a little bit like.
There's a reason. There's a door from this studio to your studio. You got to deal with that.
A little river smells.
A little river smell. You know how low that water has been lately? I hope the rain helps things out. And by the way, I should mention Sven Sundgaard will join us to talk weather. We had a lot of rain come through yesterday, but the drought report came on out, and it's not looking great. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. How about another piece of news? How about I get some positive news in here? And thank you very much. This one is a good one. During a ceremonial signing on Thursday morning, Governor Tim Walz issued an executive order that will restrict so-called conversion therapy for minors, bypassing lawmakers in the GOP-led Senate who have blocked legislation to end the practice. It should be noted, I want to make sure we understand this. We know this is torturing gay kids. We know this is. We know it. And the Republican Party has said, nope, they like that. And the Republican senators have said, yep, torture the gay kids. That's what they liked. And as a matter of fact, I got to tell you the truth. I'm a little wondering who's going to be the Republican to file the lawsuit to try to challenge this executive order. Because I guarantee it's coming. Guarantee it's coming. The order comes ahead of the delayed 2021 Pride Weekend celebration, making Minnesota the latest state to restrict the controversial practice. More than two dozen states have acted to outlaw or partially ban the practice, and three other groups are facing legal challenges over bans, according to the Movement Advance Project, or an LGBTQ advocacy group. The American Medical Association rejects the practice, which involves any intervention to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. The AMA says professional consensus is that sexual orientation and gender identity are not mental disorders. The medical professionals don't think so. There's no, this is basically, this is just bigotry wrapped in hate. That's all it is. It's bigotry wrapped in hate. The executive order is not as comprehensive as previous DFL effort in the legislature to outright ban the practice. Specifically, it will direct the Minnesota Health and Commerce Departments to block health maintenance organizations and insurers from covering conversion therapy for minors. The executive order, Wall says, means no minor Minnesotan under 18 and venerable Minnesotan is subjected to this Byzantine torturous practice of conversion therapy. He added, I would be remiss if I didn't say it. Our real goal needs to be just to outright ban this discredited practice, do it through the legislative process, and do it for all Minnesotans. But I want to remind everyone from earlier in this news story, Senate Republicans apparently feel it's perfectly fine to torture gay kids. They think it's perfectly fine. Republicans think it's perfectly fine to do so. That's why they stopped these bans in the state. In the same way that they stopped basically us passing laws that would say, hey, if you're white, part of a white power group like the KKK or the Nazis, you can't be a cop. But the Republicans have said, no, racist cops are perfectly okay with them. They're horrible people. Remember that. Walls was joined by a group of LGBTQ activists, including some who spoke about the harm they experienced and witnessed firsthand from the practice. If you ever read, Brett, have you ever read any of the firsthand accounts of the insane torture of some of these people at the hands of these conversion therapy, quote unquote, experts? And how, I mean, it's legalized torture. And the people in it, and I'm just going to make the call here. The ones who seem to be most tied to a religious intent on this seem to be the sickest people, man. Some of the stories that you hear about what they did to some of these gay kids is just unforgivable. And people should be going to jail.
Absolutely. And as we know, Paul Gazelka has his own personal stake in this as well.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, this has been a big part of the story on a lot of coverage, which I think is important to say. The effort comes 2 years after an emotional capital debate divided even Republicans, including some of the Senate who opposed the practice and personally involved the chamber's top leader who sought treatment for his oldest child. That's right. Paul Gazelka tried to get his child into conversion therapy. Jenna Gazelka, 32, told the Star Tribune that her father, Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, had taken them to a therapist who disapproved of homosexuality. Gazelka's therapist worked at a clinic run by Marcus Bachman. Yes, that Marcus Bachman. Husband of former Minnesota GOP Representative Michelle Bachman. That's me. I haven't had to do Michelle's voice in a long time. I'm Michelle Bachman. Oh, boy. Thank God you're back. I know. No, you can go away again. We don't need you. Go away, Bubbles. I'm done with you again. I heard you. That's all I needed to hear. Bye-bye. Of course, husband of former Minnesota GOP Representative Michelle Bachman, whose practice was accused of offering conversion therapy. I do remember a lot of horrible things being said about being gay, Gazelka said. This is Jenna Gazelka. Gazelka said they came out as bisexual and later lesbian when they were a teenager. Now a college writing instructor, Gazelka identifies as bigender and uses they, them as pronouns. Having been in an environment, family, and even professional environment that is not accepting of the gay community, I am heartened to hear that at least in professional environments, they're not going to be able to break that professional code, limiting the harm they can cause in these developmental stages, Jenna Gazelka said. A spokesman for Senator Gazelka did not immediately respond to a request for comment from him or Walz's actions on the child's remarks. The Minnesota Family Council, a Christian advocacy organization, criticized the Walls' action as executive overreach, calling it a direct attack on the individual choice of the constitutional rights of patients, families, and therapists. You are a Christian group. Funny story. I know. Are we ready for a little Bible time? Oh, that's right. Religious disclaimer. I used to identify as Catholic. I'm a pseudo-Catholic Christian now. I'm trying to find a new church. I'm working on that. I'm a pseudo-Catholic Christian. You do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do, okay? But you kind of get where I'm coming from. Funny story, if you claim to be Christian, that means you follow Jesus. And if that means you follow Jesus, that you go through the story of Jesus, which is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four Gospels of the Bible. Funny story, at no point in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, or anywhere in Jesus' life, which makes you a Christian, Does he condemn gay people? He doesn't. Not once. Not once. Nowhere in the Bible are lesbians condemned, FYI. So go team go. But not once does Jesus, and you say you're Christians, does Jesus condemn homosexuality? And so, yeah, I don't know what kind of Bible you're using, but you're kind of adding things to Jesus' table that he didn't order, okay? I'm just letting you know. Just it's a funny thing. The same thing about abortion, too. Just FYI. Not in there. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. No. And what's going on all the time back then? It was, actually. It was a common practice, and it wasn't like Jesus wasn't outspoken, but for some reason didn't say a thing about it. I know. The more you know. Anyway, rainbow effect. There you go. Needless to say, the Minnesota Family Council, a Christian advocacy organization, saying no. Gazelka, one of the highest-ranking Republicans in the state, is currently mulling a run for governor. If elected governor, Gazelka could undo the executive order. Wow. Asked whether he would vote for their father for governor, Gazelka declined to say that. I'm saying Jenna Gazelka declined to say on that one. Walz's executive order comes on the heels of a battle in the Senate over the administration's efforts to enact environmental policy through a rulemaking process, forcing out commissioners in the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Asked about the potential that the Senate could push back on his executive order, Walz deferred to State Senator Scott Dibble, the DFLer from Minneapolis, who previously sponsored legislation to ban conversion therapy. If the Senate leadership wants to make an issue of this, we can have that conversation in front of the public because the public is with us, Dibble said. And that's right. This is the reason why Paul Gazelka and the Republicans want to have discussions like this in private, outside of public purview. They do not want people to see them have to argue for legally torturing gay kids. They don't want to see them have to do that, so they'll frantically say, we should have a discussion, but no one should see the discussion, and no one take notes. Don't make sure no one knows what we're saying. That's the Republican way. Dibbles, the Senate leadership wants to make this an issue that they can. The public's with us. They know that this causes active harm in young people's lives. In fact, the truth is it's simply Majority Leader Gazelka who is blocking the passage of this bill. Walz, who is up for re-election in 2022, argued it would be unwise for any gubernatorial candidate to seek to undo the executive order. I got news for you. You may want to think that GLBTQ rights is just some inner city issue. It's not. And because the reality is that because we are starting to make some small steps in the right direction, and I would consider this a small step, and the fact that we are still, it's 2021, and we just gotten to the point where the governor is saying, you know what, I'm going to ban the torturing of gay kids. That's a small step. We have a long way to go. But we have a much more accepting world than we did years ago, for sure. Things are getting somewhat better. It has a long way to go. But people throughout the state are becoming far more comfortable with the idea that the GLBTQ community exists. They're everywhere. They're family and friends. And if you guys want to sit there and say, well, but we should still torture them, well, I don't think that's going to be the winning argument you're going to make. It might get you that Republican nomination. It might get you the Republican gubernatorial nomination. But, yeah, try to walk that one back. Good luck with that. That would probably be my guess why Paul Gazelka has not said a dang thing today about this. Not a dang thing. Walz added, I don't certainly think there's any benefit in political rhetoric around if you're going to running on a platform that you want to hurt children with a discredited medical practice that doesn't seem like it would be a good model. Yeah, that's, you know, one of the reasons why I would say still right now, Governor Walz is the front runner to be reelected in 2022. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. But, you know, Gazelka is not the only faulty Republican I could bring up today. Did you hear the temper tantrum earlier this week from one of my favorites, Senator Mary Kiffmeyer? Oh, what a delightful little peach blossom she is. Yes, if you don't know, she is bitter that she was not more loved when she was Secretary of State. And so she kind of does a lot of stupid things. I mean, really stupid things, like phenomenally stupid things. I mean, stupid could be Mary Kiffmeyer's middle name. I don't know. Is it an S? Do we know? M? Moron? No, I don't know. Idiot? I? Okay, we don't know. We'll figure it out. Anyway, Mayor, she, of course, being the one who is trying to completely and totally gut the Minnesota Historical Society during the budget negotiations because she was apparently furious they used the word Bedote to refer to the traditional name of this Fort Snelling area. God forbid, you know, it's not like Native Americans weren't calling it that for years before we got here, but she's upset about that. And of course, she loves Christopher Columbus and wants that Christopher Columbus statue back up. Even though I don't know if you've heard this story, Columbus kidnapped and sold into the sex trade 9 and 10 year old girls. That's right. He did that. He actually wrote about it in his journals as he would pay his people with sex slaves who were 9 and 10 year old local native girls. But hey, Mary Kiffmeyer wants a statue for that guy down there. You know, we could go with a lot of different people. Go with Prince, Dylan. Could go with, you know, some of the great military heroes from the state. Wow, a lot of people. No, they want that Christopher Columbus statue up. Anyway, Mary's bitter. And she hates Steve Simon because Steve Simon is a competent and good Secretary of State and something that clearly she was never there. But she found a new rallying cry earlier this week with the whole Representative Thompson thing, where, of course, this is the representative who was pulled over, accused the police of racial profiling, which, once again, it's not my job as a white guy from the suburbs to tell an African-American man in the city of Minneapolis, St. Paul, if they do not feel racially profiled, which I think even the Republicans in the state must have realized, because did you notice after about 12 hours of them saying, how dare he question this? They really kind of dropped that thread and became only about, well, where is he living? And he kept his address private, apparently. When you file your paperwork to run for office, you can keep your residence private. And now, Thompson's got some issues. Let's just be honest here. I mean, he's got a Wisconsin driver's license. He had an address listed on the police report that was out of his district. And, you know, he needs to get that fixed. But it's funny because immediately Mary Kiffmeyer, decided to go over there and attack Steve Simon, saying, why aren't you following up with full investigations into where people are living? Now, mind you, this is a woman who was Secretary of State at one point, who didn't seem to understand the Secretary of State does not have any kind of investigative powers or branches or crack detective team ready to go at a moment's notice to go find their address. Apparently, she doesn't understand this, even though she was in charge of the department, apparently. I know. Might mean she was an incompetent Secretary of State. I don't know. That's just one theory you could come out with. Just one theory. One theory, Mary. But funny story, and I want to give Ricardo Lopez over the Minnesota Reformer a heads up on this, because we talked about this last year. Funny story about Mary Kiffmeyer. She didn't seem that upset about this problem last year when State Senator Julie Rosen's recent filing for re-election that marks her address as private has again raised questions about where the powerful chair of the Finance Committee actually lives. Does she live in the 684-square-foot basement-less four-room house without central air in Vernon Center she rents in her district, or the 5,784-square-foot four-bedroom, three-and-a-half-bathroom home with 2,320-square-foot garage she built in 2011 in Mendota, when not in her district, by the way? Mendota residence is assessed at $1,344,300. Rosen and her former husband, Tom, a wealthy agribusinessman profiled in the 2009 Connect Business article, divorced in 2010, and later sold their Fairmont home that resided in the Senate District. Rosen had rented a small rural Vernon Center house since January 2014. In 2016, Rosen filed for divorce using the Vernon Center street address. She is registered to vote at that address there and has a mail delivery in the box of the Vernon Center post office. She has not claimed a homestead allowance for the Mendota property. As the Mankato Free Press first reported on May 19th, Rosen listed her, this is the 19th of last year, Rosen listed her place of residence as private in her affidavit of cabinet candidacy during May election filing. And I do not believe Mary Kiffmeyer had a problem with that. What does private address mean? Well, now they go through that. In short, whether the candidate files with the Secretary of State office or a local courthouse and asks their address to be in private, as Rosen did, the candidate is not required to provide a police report or an order of protection. Police reports often called from visits of addresses and orders of protection filed in Minnesota are public records. Reformer contacted the Blue Earth County Sheriff's Department records to see if any police calls have been made to the Vernon Center address listed on Rose's filing. The police spokesman said there had been no calls to the address since June 2016. A call to the clerk of the Blue Earth County Courthouse revealed no orders of protection existed in Rosen in any county in Minnesota. Reached by phone, Rosen said that she had not moved from the Vernon Center address on her 2016 filing. She said she was surprised the question of her residence had come up. There are more important things to go on here. You'd think so, you know, to a point, you'd think so. So, I mean, clearly, Julie Rosen had a question here about residence in 2020. And this story, I got to talk to Ricardo Lopez because there doesn't seem to be anything about an outraged, infuriated Mary Kiffmeyer here talking about the crack detective investigative team from the Secretary of State's office running over and investigating what the heck is going on with Julie Rosen. You know, Brett, it's times like these I like to stroke my chin and start to think and ponder a little bit. So Julie Rosen is a white woman and a Republican. Representative Thompson is a black man. I wonder what's changed that's gotten Mary Kiffmeyer so fired up all of a sudden. I guess it will remain a mystery. Maybe she just doesn't like St. Paul. Is that it? No, it could be something else. So once again, let me just run this. Okay. Not upset about a white woman doing this, but seems to be infuriated a black man did this. I don't know. Hey, I guess we'll have to think about it later because we've got to take a break. When we do come on back, Sven Sundgaard is going to join us. We'll talk weather when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I'm going to see it this year. Usually it happens when I'm on vacation in June. I'm glad it's going to be happening this year. I'll be out there at TC Pride. Make sure you're out there as well and have some fun in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Sven Sundgaard is kind enough to join us today. Of course, bring me the news and, of course, his YouTube channel. The exceptional weather forecast, Premier Living as well. I want to make sure he has got that great site too, where he's kind enough to join us to talk about the weather that we are having. And Sven, we get a rarity. We get to talk some rain.
has been rare. And yeah, you mentioned the Premier-Living website. I just posted, because we're going to talk about this, I'm sure, a bit today, an update on our drought situation. And the drought's expanded. I know some places, I think you were saying you got a couple of inches where you are, right? Mm-hmm. That was such a crazy narrow area that got 2 to 4 inches of rain. But like a lot of the rainfall events we've seen over the last month, they're very narrow, hit and miss. So what's encouraging is that we're seeing an increase in actual rainfall events, whereas, remember, for 3 weeks at least or more in June, there was nothing happening at all. So at least they're around, but we need more widespread rain that's a heavier rainfall for more areas, and we just haven't seen that yet. So despite, you know, the drought ended if you're in Corcoran or one of those places that got 4 inches of rain, but it's still going strong for most places.
Well, and to back that up, I was up in Blaine at the soccer tournament that's going on up there right now. And so I had to drive back yesterday afternoon. I came through that, and I come in down 169 right by Plymouth. It was pouring hard there. Not as hard in Hopkins, but I mean, I'd say we got maybe an inch, maybe two. I mean, it was coming down really hard for a bit. But the radio station is down here in Eden Prairie. And when we got done with the show, it was pretty much dry. I don't know how much they got here, but they clearly did not get nearly as much as some of these other areas. You mentioned that Corcoran, Maple Plain, Plymouth, Medina area. Is it 4 inches they got up there?
Yeah, up to 4 inches. That was a smaller area, but 2 to 4 in that swath that included basically went from Watertown, Mound, Orono, Medina, and then up to Brooklyn Park,
Coon Rapids, and then as far northeast as is maybe Andover. But that was really, that was it. You go up to just to the northwest a little, St. Michael or even Crystal. It was a lot less. The Crystal Airport did pick up an inch, but the airport, our official observation site for the Twin Cities, had 22 hundredths of an inch.
Really?
So, you know, and that's as the crow flies, I measured it 21 miles from the spot that got 4 inches. So that's the kind of rainfall that we've been dealing with all summer. Is some places are getting it, but we're basically just poking holes in the drought. So it's like not even Swiss cheese. It's worse than that. Tinier holes in a Swiss cheese slice. So it's actually, you know, it's really, it, I don't want to, no rain is worthless, right?
Yeah.
But as far as the drought goes on a statewide scope, these have not done much yet. So I wrote up this whole article going in depth on the drought today, but I did want to go over a few numbers because 98% of Minnesota is now in drought. That's up 5% from a week ago. And the severe drought is now more than half the state, 52%. That's up 12%. And it hasn't been on the map at all this season yet, but now 4% of Minnesota is considered extreme. So you go to the western part of Stearns County, basically up to Bemidji and Red Lake. There's a narrow area there where they are 6 inches behind for rainfall over the last basically 6-7 weeks, which is just, that's almost impossible to make up. That will require really just prolonged periods of wet weather here, either later this summer, but you know, more likely the way patterns work, it's probably going to have to be a really wet fall to try to make up for that.
I want to ask you a little bit of the science of this, because it seems like these storms and the weather and weather people are looking at these storms that are coming in and kind of anticipating what is a traditional storm, a fairly large swath of rain, most people getting, say, like an inch and maybe one or two places getting more. What we seem to be getting now is storms that almost start to break apart, where you do get that consolidated, very heavy band of rain in a very specific area, and the rest of it kind of fizzles out. Is there something to the science here that we're missing that is kind of starting to diffuse these storms a little bit?
I would really put it more towards the way our computer models work. They really have a hard time with a situation like yesterday. So they actually did pretty well in forecasting, you know, days out. The models were showing the potential for 1 to 4 inches of rain. And we were like, oh, wow, that's great. We knew it wouldn't be widespread. That's just the nature of thunderstorms. Yeah. Any of these systems, it's going to be hit and miss, and it's going to vary greatly, even in a small area. That's pretty typical. But the computer models can't handle that well because of the way the computer model looks at the world. It looks at everything in grids, right? That are, you know, depending upon the model's particular resolution, it's either a 4 kilometer grid or it's 12 kilometers, whatever. But something on that scale where you're talking about, you know, 22 hundredths of an inch to 4 inches over a 20-mile span, the models can't handle that. So they did actually a pretty good job at handling that there's the potential for heavy rain. And we could see that. There was really high values of what we call precipitable water. It's the amount of water available in the atmospheric column. And thunderstorms are the most efficient way to extract that. So we knew that, okay, if we can get thunderstorms to develop in this air mass, you're going to have heavy rain. And then where does everything else come together? So I would say it's more how the computer model resolution works. It did a pretty good job with the system. It's just trying to forecast where one very narrow band sets up is virtually impossible. But those are the kind of things that I tell people. You know, people always ask, well, do you think we're going to have 1 year forecast someday? I'm like, no. Because the nature of chaos and your show is not a day long, so we can't just go into all that. But basically, what we can get better at and what is getting better at are shorter term forecasts, better resolution models, better data that we can put into the models. Because the computer models can only do as well as the information we put in them. So we have to have higher resolution of data. Satellites have helped come a long way by putting more numbers, more information, so that we have a better initial understanding of what's happening. So these are the kind of things, these extreme precip events in small scales and thunderstorm forecasting, those are things that have already improved a ton in the last 10, 20 years and will continue to improve. But, you know, going past, you're not going to have a really good forecast probably ever past 2-3 weeks.
Yeah. I think you do an exceptional job, and I encourage you, by the way, if you're not watching when Sven does put out one of those weather forecasts, you need to, because they're exceptional. It is a very tricky business because, as you said, little things can impact it. And you, and as you said, even with all the best information, you're trying to kind of almost throw a dart at a board when it comes down to just what suburbs of a large metro area are going to see rain. It's the fact that you can at least narrow it down to the west side, I think, is a real attribute to where we are today, at least at that point.
Totally. And the models, you know, leading up to it a couple days out, they're not going to be very good at that. But day of and even the night before, the models were pretty good and particularly good at creating the scenario we had yesterday, which is we knew the day before that we would get one of these mesoscale convective complex systems to develop. So it's these storms develop in clusters, form a line out in the Black Hills. And we get more of these later in the summer at night, but that's where they start in the evening or overnight in that area. And they form into one organized cluster of thunderstorms. And that's what came through yesterday. And they're very beneficial for rainfall, as many of us saw, but we normally get more of them. That's part of the problem. So that you get heavy rain in narrow spots, but eventually if you're getting one a week, everybody gets a turn. So it did a very good job at forecasting that one of these MCCs would develop, whereas 10 years ago, models couldn't handle something that complex. And so we knew already the day before on Tuesday afternoon, our severe risk here in the metro is really diminishing quickly. Because if we get one of those and we're cloudy and rainy in the middle of the day, that puts the kibosh on severe weather, which is good and bad. You know, nobody wants severe weather, but if we had had that redevelopment of storms later in the day, that would have brought a round two that would have brought more heavy rain to areas that didn't get it in round one. So we would have had more of a widespread soaking across the metro instead of this almost nothing in the south and too much in the northwest.
There, I want to ask you about diminishing returns. You mentioned the areas by Bemidji's got 6 inches here, and you get this downpour in the Corcoran area there. You know, when you get a really dry area, obviously the best case scenario is say once every day you get about an inch of rain, it kind of fixes it up. After 6 days, guess what? You're back to normal. Hopefully enough of the ground is absorbed there. But when you have it all come down in one, 3 or 4 hour window, is there a point of diminishing returns where just the water, even though the land and the plants, everything needs the water, the fact is it's coming down so fast that it doesn't really get rid of that drought problem there, because most of the water, because it's coming down at such a tilt, is draining off before it can be absorbed effectively?
Yeah, no, that definitely becomes an issue. And that's where meteorologists in the hydrology center, and we're lucky that we not only have the weather service based in the Twin Cities, but also the hydrology center, which is the whole region of the upper Midwest, is based in the Twin Cities too. And that's something that they have to look at in their models, is how hard and dry is the ground in areas? Because you don't have as efficient of absorption. And so when you get these extreme rainfall events, of which 4 inches in a couple of hours is pretty extreme, and as we've talked about, those kinds of events are happening more frequently in a warmer world. But how much of that water gets absorbed and how much of it just leads to erosion and flooding. That's where they look at, particular flash flooding concerns in those situations. And there were no warnings out at that point. But it had that band of precip happened in the Twin Cities, like right over Minneapolis or St. Paul, we probably would have had flash flood warnings yesterday, because the ground is dry and hard here, just like everywhere. But then you have on top of it the urban areas where we know that our sewer systems can't handle that amount of rain in that short of a period of time.
Just like that one storm years ago that kind of washed out a part of 35W. It was too much.
Yeah, and the city manhole covers.
Oh, God, horrible. Now, you have also talked about the return, because now that we got this rain past us, great news, everybody. It's not going to rain for a while again. It doesn't look like it, at least.
No, there's nothing.
And the heat dome. And you have talked about this heat dome that seems to be roaming the West Coast like a drifter. It's down in the Southwest right now. But your latest forecast, and I'll post this online a little bit later on, it's going to start reforming closer to us, correct?
Yeah, and remember, we talked about this last week, even, that this was going to be a possibility in the week that we're talking about next week. So it right now, it's kind of spread out. And as we've talked about, as the heat spreads out, it's less intense. But then as it condenses again in an area, it increases in intensity. And that process is happening again this weekend. So last week, it was Vegas's turn, remember, in the Southwest, Death Valley. Death Valley broke a new all-time record for the planet. The most reliable record. There are temperatures that are above 130, but the World Meteorological Organization doesn't place a lot of value on them, whereas we know the Death Valley Station is a reliable record. And even then, they go through and spend it's a process of months really verifying the record. So the old record, I believe, was 129.8, and they hit an even 130.0 over the weekend. And so that would be, if verified, a new world record.
Wow.
But also Las Vegas tied their all-time record of 117. So there are a lot of records going, but yeah, now it's kind of spread out this week, and this weekend is regrouping, and the core of it, it seems to be developing probably over Montana, Wyoming, the Western Dakotas, and that's pretty close to us. And so as that happens, that's why we're going to see the temperatures increase for us through the weekend. We may hit 90 already by Sunday, but likely Monday, and the blend of our models, which is basically the average of the computer models, does bring in probably, we're looking at a 6-7 day stretch at least of consecutive days that will be at or above 90 degrees. And then the other thing we're going to be looking carefully at, as we've talked about, how extreme will that heat get? Because the core of that heat dome appears to move a little too close to us along the Minnesota, Western Dakotas border by later next week. And if that happens, that's when we have a pretty good shot at some triple-digit readings. And still, the American model has been pretty consistent at giving us at least 100 degrees sometime next Thursday to Sunday. And, you know, it'll throw out one once in a while, but when it's doing it consistently every day and as we're getting closer, now it's something that everybody's going to pay very close attention to.
You had said in June, what is the average amount of 90-degree days we get in Minneapolis-St. Paul over a regular summer?
13.
How many were you at right now?
We are at, you're putting me on the spot.
I'm sorry, don't worry about it.
I can look it up quickly if we want to talk about something else. Well, we're doing that. So we had two only so far this month of July. That surprises me, actually.
Yeah.
But remember, the 4th and 5th of July, it was 96 on the 5th. So two in July, and then we had a bunch in June, we had 12. So we're at 14. So we're already above. So if nothing else happens the rest of the summer, we're above normal.
And we're going to have, it sounds like, multiple days, at least 90s.
Yeah, we could have seven more. The most ever was 1988, was 40-something days in the 90s. Ugh. So imagine that.
Oh,
but
God.
We beat June of 1988 just this last month as far as just June goes, so.
And once again, and you said this back in June, once it gets up into those 90s, something's got to cool it down. And if we get into a pattern where it's not knocking that 90-degree heat out, I don't want to see another two-week stretch of this. I mean, that was nasty in June.
No, and there's no reason to think that, you know, everything in July it sets up for the warmest temperatures and the longest heat waves because it is the warmest period in the year for the whole Northern Hemisphere. So we'll see. Does it rival what we had in June? Remember, we had 9 consecutive days of 90 plus in June. And again, the average of our models gives us 7 coming up at least. And that's only because the 7th 90 is at the end of the model 10-day model stretch. So there could be more out there. But, you know, all it takes is one day in the middle that's in the 80s that, you know, one or two of the models that does forecast. And that could break that streak. But, you know, does that really matter to the rest of us if we have 12 90s, but one day in the middle was 88?
Oh, that 88 was delightful. That way, I remember when it cooled down to 89.
That's what counts for the statistics. And we're right in the thick of statistically the warmest 2 weeks of the year where our average temperature is at its peak, the average at least. So we'll see. But as we all know around here, August can be a very warm month, too. But, you know, we've had some years where August is almost September-like.
Oh, very. Yeah. And then one or two times where I've been to the State Fair and it feels October-like out there. So, yeah, it does happen. Yeah, but not
a couple of those days.
Not too often. All right. So for the weekend, what should we look for, Sven?
It's going to be, you know, gorgeous. I mean, I know it's hard to complain about, but we are in a drought, too. But it's going to be sunny, really, the next 7 to 10 days. There is no rain in sight. So if you didn't get yesterday's rain, which most of us didn't get enough anyway, you got to keep on watering. And we're looking at temperatures that, you know, today we topped out at 83, which is right about the average of 84. Tomorrow we should be in the mid 80s, mid to upper 80s Saturday, probably upper 80s, if not 90 already Sunday. We won't have really humidity yet, though, this weekend. So that's one thing, pleasant thing we've had this summer is because of the lack of moisture, there's a lack of humidity, too. So next week is going to be a dry heat, but it starts out Monday at 90. I think we're in the mid-90s Tuesday, and we'll be right at, you know, 90 to 95 degrees at least all through next week. And there is that potential. Thursday's the day to watch, where if I was a betting man, is probably one of our better chances of hitting 100 here. Coming up in the next 7 to 10 days.
I'll link to the Premier Living link as well, the Premier-Living, the weather there. You'll get a link to that on social media. We'll get his current weather forecast out as well. Sven Sundgaard, kind enough to join us, bringmethenews.com. Sven, thank you very much. Always appreciated, my friend.
Yeah, maybe we'll see you at Pride this weekend, too. I think I heard you say you were going to try to check it out.
I will definitely get down there this weekend because, like I said, most of the time I'm out of town at a cabin, so I'm going down this year because I've always missed it.
I kind of like it in mid-July more. The weather's better usually around here.
It would be. I don't know if it's so nice next weekend, but this weekend it looks like we might get lucky on this. So,
yep.
I'll look for you out there. Thank you very much, Sven Sundgaard. Right. We'll take a break. Spotlight that interview as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Exceptional stuff from Sven. And Sven was, by the way, the only weather forecaster I knew that earlier this week was saying, I don't know if those thunderstorms are going to be as widespread. He was seeing the initial signs that was coming back. So the reason I have this guy on is he's the best dang weather guy I know. He is. And it absolutely gives you the great information. And listen how much he gave us. It's all the science and everything. Love that guy. Sven Sundgaard will spotlight that interview. Some quick notes here. Former Brooklyn Center police officer charged with killing the black man during a traffic stop says she does not want her trial televised. Kimberly Potter charged with manslaughter in the April 11th shooting of Dante Wright. Attorney General Keith Ellison wants to have it there, but she is refusing, and it sounds like she has to sign on if it's going to happen. It's nice to see that her rights are preserved. It's nice to see her rights are preserved. Thank God her rights are preserved. Anyway. You thought it was a taser, huh? Minnesota's unemployment rate held steady at 4% in June, the same as the month before. The Minnesota Department of Unemployment and Economic Development announced on Thursday that the June data showed some good news for black Minnesotans. The unemployment rate for black workers fell to 4.5%, down from nearly 7% in May, based on 12-month moving averages. For Latino workers, the rate was unchanged at 6.6. The rate for white workers dropped from 5.1 in May. Minnesota's unemployment rate is lower than the national rate, which increased slightly to 5.9% in June. Additionally, labor force participation rate here was higher, nearly 68% compared to 61.6% nationally. I bring this up because, once again, there are jackass businesses who want to go out there saying, I can't get workers because of expanded unemployment checks. And the reality is, no, the workforce is out there. People want to work. They just don't want to work for you, which once again means you need to go look in the mirror and say, what kind of boss am I? I'm not a good person. There also has to be one clarification yesterday, Brett. And of course, of all the things I said on yesterday's show, the one thing that I actually got asked about twice yesterday was a joke I made when I was talking about how I got soaked in Blaine yesterday. And I said, of course, that's going to be a video you'll find on my OnlyFans.
Well, more detail on that.
Yeah, right. Well, they were confused when I said, oh, you can find the video of me. And I said, well, because I was up in Blaine yesterday with the soccer tournament. I got rained on. And I said, I'm still soaked from Blaine. And I said, well, of course, that's a video you'll find on my OnlyFans page later on that evening. To which got people saying, does Matt actually have an OnlyFans page? Now, if you do not know what OnlyFans is, I had to explain this to my wife as well, which is okay. It's kind of a site for people that want to get into a little bit of risque photoing and videoing, and they can do it and try to make some money. For the record, I'm not going to tell you if I've got one. I'm not.
Neither confirming nor denying.
Confirming or denying, but oh boy. Will there be some hot, steamy videos coming up later on? I was up with Blaine again today. You'll have to find out. Wait for this special feature. Native Roots Radio up next. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.